Well, that was an old one from your collection, Graham.
That's... Yes, it was, actually. I think I borrowed it from Veronica. Got to get it back.
His friend is there, and he joined the Navy to see the world, which we'll find out more about in a moment. Mm. So late last week on Twitter, Graham Kemlow read an interesting post from an Australian woman who said she was travelling the world, all 196 countries, and that she'd been on the road for 700-plus days. Petro Mayray is a young woman travelling alone in the Middle East and Africa. Graham messaged her saying that she sounded like she had an interesting story. And they arranged to speak by phone from Dubai, and she agreed to this interview about the risks she's taking.
Now, I'm talking to Petro Mayray. Petro is an inveterate traveller, I think you could say. She's been on the road for almost 2 years, and she doesn't mind visiting places that other people perhaps aren't that willing to go to. Welcome to Travel Writers Radio, Petro.
Hi, Graham. Nice to speak to you.
And you. Look, it was just by chance that I came across a post of yours on Twitter the other morning over my breakfast and my coffee, and it intrigued me, and I contacted you because I thought what you were doing as a single white female, the SWF in the classified ads, I guess, was pretty intriguing, maybe a little bit dangerous, but you do seem to be happy putting yourself in places where others wouldn't go. Would that be a fair comment?
Yes, but that's because I kind of see how kind people are, so I'm willing to take the risk to experience more of that kindness. On my way to Iraq, I stopped in Bahrain, and this pilot for Etihad, who's actually from Bahrain, I was a bit upset at the time, and he invited me to his home, and I only had a 9.5-hour layover. They took me back to cook me dinner. They only got 4 hours sleep, so they could take me back to the airport and take me out for breakfast first as well.
Well, that's very kind.
And this is an Arabian culture. So I love, I was talking to someone last night about, she was trying to see if I have a favourite region, and I said, well, there's aspects of different regions that I favour. So
right.
Europe is the history and the buildings, whereas in the Middle East, it's more their hospitality and their food.
Yeah, they're very hospitable. So just take me back. You're from Australia, obviously, but I can tell by your accent. When did you start your journey? And perhaps just in brief, why did you decide that you would go on the road did you decide you'd go on the road for 2 years? Perhaps you didn't.
So I had just been medically discharged from the Navy. I served for 8.5 years. I was really lost in what to do now in my life, where to go, because that was my life and that was my career. I actually joined the Navy to travel more when I was young, 19 years old, turning 30 in a couple of days.
Oh, are you?
Happy
birthday for that.
Yeah.
You might have to sing a song, though.
Oh, I had someone sing yesterday, and I also had someone sing the other side. I celebrated my birthday in Afghanistan, and I celebrated in the UAE already.
Oh, well.
And then I'll be celebrating in a surprise country.
Now it's going around the world on FM, on the internet, and on SoundCloud. So happy birthday! Anyway, I interrupted you. Sorry.
So you
left the Navy.
No, that's okay.
You left the Navy,
yeah.
What happened then?
I lost what to do. I had some financial means at the time to do it. I wasn't sure if I was going to continue to have it. It ended up turning that way that I could, but to a very strict budget.
Yeah.
And then I've also later been compensated for some injuries, and I'm still waiting for more compensation. So I do have some, because I'm not always in Australia, I haven't been able to finalise everything.
Right.
And that sort of restricted me to remain to a budget and not go crazy, because I know that there'll be more, it just takes me a lot longer to get things finalised.
So The World on a Dollar a Day.
From a financial perspective.
Is that your new book, The World on a Dollar a Day?
Or what? Well, I wish it was that cheap.
Yeah.
Unless you're hitchhiking and couch surfing, yeah, it's slightly a bit more expensive to travel, for me anyway. I know there's some people who'd be like, hey, travel, living in Southeast Asia on $5 a day. It's probably possible. I have found some hostels in my time that I've stayed at that cost me $2 a night, meals that are less than a dollar. So it is possible, but it's not my preferred method of travel because I've got a lot of expensive photography equipment, so I prefer to have my own room now.
You don't go to five-star hotels, though, obviously. Have you got a sort of a standard that you're prepared to go down to?
Yes, I'm more than happy with 2-3-star.
Right.
I do sometimes, very rarely, treat myself to five-star. I got to stay in an amazing five-star lodge, but I was traveling with a friend at the time, and it was $1,000 a day per person, but it was completely free because she worked with friends in exchange. She's a travel writer in exchange for accommodation. So we could stay in the Truby, having an amazing view.
Yeah. Well, those joys are obviously welcome when they come along, but day-to-day, you obviously stick to your pretty tight budget. So did you plot out a course when you began your travelling? How did you work out where you were going?
I plotted out a whole bunch of courses. I've got this one book that I've been carrying with me ever since I left, and in it, it's got every single country, because the goal is to visit every country in the world, so it's got every country's visa requirements. I would write down lists of countries I intended to visit before the end of the year, and it would change again and again, just based on where I'm at or what I managed to achieve.
So how many countries have you been to so far, Petra?
66, and I think only one of them was pre-starting this, because every other one I've actually gone back to.
Right.
That I've been, before.
Okay. And how many are there on your list of countries to visit?
I started with 196. I'm still stuck with that number. I think I'll up it to 198 for Western Sahara and Palestine. But there are more, because I kind of want to go to all the places that have their own government, own currency, but there's only 193 United Nations recognised countries.
Okay. As I mentioned earlier, you've been to some places that people would probably consider dangerous.
Yeah.
What would they be? You might disagree, but I know you went to Afghanistan and Iraq. How did you find them?
Yeah. February, someone asked me if I wanted to go on a trip on a tour group to Iraq, and I initially said I'll see, and then a week later I think I said yes. So I always knew it was going to happen. And then one of the girls I invited to come along, because she's an avid traveler herself, asked me if I'd like to go to Afghanistan. At this stage, I'd already decided I wanted to get to Afghanistan before the end of the year, and I said yes, and I arranged a private tour for us with a friend I know who owns a company that does tours. There's only three companies.
So you had some inside knowledge to help you in that particular situation. Do you ever find yourself somewhere where you know nobody and you're just literally living on your wits?
About 80% of my travels are like that, especially in Europe. I bus it, so I just hop on a bus. I wouldn't even have accommodation booked to the next destination, and sometimes I don't even know what language I speak or if I'd have mobile phone reception. Like, especially when we think of Europe, we just think of Western Europe, but there's Eastern Europe that's ex-communist, very Russian still. People still speak, like, especially in the older generation, I have found myself in places that no one actually speaks English.
Yeah.
And I'd rock up and I'd be like, okay, where am I going to go? Where am I going to stay? And I just figured out as I go. I may just show up to a hostel or whatever and be like, can I stay here? And on the day, that's happened quite a bit.
Yeah.
Or even a hotel. In Eastern Europe, you can find four or five-star hotel for €25 a night.
And you've never had to resort to the park bench?
Never. Or just the airport benches.
Well, the airport, that's cheating, I reckon. Tom Hanks made a whole movie about that. Do you find travelling as a single white female presents any special challenges for you personally?
I definitely do, yes. And recently we've had a discussion online about this as females in a group I belong. Just after some things, like, I find that maybe the men don't realise the challenges we face and they don't speak up for us. That was what prompted me to share it, realising that guys just turn a blind eye to it. The continued harassment, I've had people touch me inappropriately, I've had even worse stuff happen. It's definitely the sexual side of things that does.
So
it hasn't made me stop, it's just made me want, I guess, more self-defense training.
Yeah, so you're not talking about Italians pinching you on the bottom. This is more serious than that, yeah?
There has been some serious stuff. Like, I don't like speaking poor about these countries, but because I really did enjoy my visits there. But, for example, at a Bokashi match, when you're one of two females there, and people don't see females in Afghanistan very often. Like, the little kids will keep coming up and, like, touching my phone. I'm like, why do you do this?
Yeah.
And then I also had someone do it in front of a holy mosque in Najaf, a holy city in Iraq. And but in that same sense, I saw two local Iraqi guys wanting to, like, literally beat up this guy for touching me inappropriately.
Okay.
Like, they grabbed him by the arm and dragged him away. So I saw, like, the protective side as well towards females.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose you have to make a judgment call as to whether you put yourself in danger sometimes. Does that worry you?
I'm not worried. I would do anything, but because I travel through these countries not completely solo, it made me question, because I am now a blonde female, so I do get a lot more attention when I go there. Like, even if we went there as a group, I'm always the first person that they'd grab, and I'm young. There's not many young people in my generation that will travel to these places. I'm the first person they'll grab to want a selfie with.
Okay.
I'm always the one that they want their contact details, etc., so I just have to give them something fake.
So,
yeah, I've noticed that. Like, when I was waiting in an airport, I had about 20 or 30 guys coming up to take selfies with me, and then I ended up later wanting selfies with someone because I ran into the Turkmenistan soccer team, and I was like, hey, I want a photo with you because I want to send it to my friends because we went to the football stadium the day before. Hope that makes sense.
Ah, well, I suppose the phone has made us all a bit bolder in asking for selfies and, you know, approaching people you perhaps wouldn't have approached before. But you wear culturally appropriate clothing, don't you?
Sometimes. So I do it when I feel it's necessary. I have, like, a personal thing with the culturally appropriate clothes because I feel a male shouldn't tell a female what to wear. So I still want to wear my stuff and what I normally feel comfortable in, but if I know that this is going to jeopardize my safety, no questions asked. I wear what I have to wear to blend in.
Yeah, so you take hijab.
I get it there.
I bought
a hijab Iranian style because each country has a different requirement. So what is good in one country may not necessarily be good in another. So in Iraq and Iran, they wear black.
Yeah.
Even in the UAE, and I'm sure in other Arab countries, but not in all of them, you're required to wear locally appropriate.
Right.
So Afghanistan, it's very colourful. It's more a long dress, not actually like a abaya or hijab. It's just a long dress with long sleeves and a headscarf. That's
okay.
What's culturally appropriate there. But then they have the burqa. I now own one.
Right.
And they'll wear on top of this. But it's a blue burqa. It's not a black or any other colour. Most of them are blue. Someone saw one brown one while we were there.
You're not wandering around like an ingenue in these places. You are aware of issues that may arise. So you're in Dubai at the moment. You obviously want to start to visit a few more places. What are going to be the interesting places on your itinerary over the next 12 months or so, if indeed you want to stay away that long?
I don't plan that far in advance, so I've only got till the end of the year planned. So I definitely have Somalia coming up at some stage, and then I'm going to Chad for 2 weeks camping in the desert.
Oh, okay. That sounds interesting. Yep. Is that like a planned campsite, or are you taking a two-man tent and pitching it in the middle of nowhere?
I wasn't actually involved with any of the planning. It's another one of those things where someone asked me, would you like to go somewhere, and I said yes.
Well, Petro...
Well, I always wanted to go there, yeah.
Yeah, Petro Murray, thank you so much for talking to us, and I hope we'll hear some more of your adventures. And I know you've taken lots of terrific photographs, and I think it's going to be a great chronicle of your life on the road for as long as it is. And maybe one day you'll publish a book.
I would love that. That's
okay.
A book and possibly a documentary is the ultimate goal.
Okay. Well, all I can say is thanks for talking to us on Travel Writers Radio, and stay safe, eh?
Thank you very much.
That was Graeme Kemlow speaking with traveller Petro Murray in Dubai, who's looking to collect every passport stamp.